Morning, everyone. We're just coming out of a very short two-day retreat for the residents here on dreams. And I thought I'd talk just a little bit about what we've been doing and about dreams and where they, something about how they fit into our life, which is every night, and sometimes during the day in daydreams, and the interstitial places in our awareness when little images pop up. We often don't give them much notice. And so in this retreat, all of this imagery, and especially nighttime imagery, was brought forward and amplified in various ways. So we looked into the different dream states and also dream language. Such a small part of our life is worded. And in dreaming, we have, during the day, we can be very distracted by our worded and commented and narrated experience. But at night, we have concentrated, direct experience in dreams, usually wordless. And when the words come, they come with great energy and significance. What takes place in dreams instead of being worded comes through the objects and the colors, and also direct knowing. How often in our dreams do we say, I just knew that I should walk through that door, or I knew that something was behind me, or I had a real feeling that something was just about to happen, which in fact we have during the day as well, but we don't always pay quite so much attention to it. In dreams, time doesn't operate in conventional ways. When we're remembering dreams, very often the sequence is elusive in the dream. We're not sure what happened first. Each of the segments of the dream can come kind of equivalent in their primacy. So there's not necessarily a sense of causality, which in our conventional thinking, we very often assume causality or conventional ordering. But in dreams, things just happen. They're just complete. They come forward complete. We might take a look at our daytime experience to see if actually that can be noticed as well. Things come forth complete. In dreams, space is often functionally irrelevant. Time and space aren't bound by physics. So in dreams, we fly. How many people here have had flying dreams? We breathe underwater. How many people here have discovered that actually we can breathe underwater? We travel to distant cities instantaneously. We emerge in different lives as different kinds of beings. We discover rooms that we never realized were there. We find ourselves in ancient times and in alien landscapes with alien beings. Anything goes in dreams, anything goes. Perceptions roam freely, playfully, creatively. The images and the moods are unhooked from our conventional expectations. And also working with dreams, when we work with dreams, this can help us oddly to notice an awful lot of what we actually have been filtering out during the day. Sometimes we have the experience of saying, oh, this is just like a dream, or this is a nightmare. And so the dream lends its quality to waking. But most often we're pretty moderated in the conventional everydayness and ordinariness of things. So we don't notice an awful lot. And working with dreams, we begin to notice the things that lurk at the edges that we exclude kind of automatically because they don't fit. So we can ask ourselves, what is dream and what is reality? And are they so separate? How are they separate? How are they actually, it's all dream? In what sense is our experience dreamlike? Dogen points out the difference between dreamy and dream. You know, we're not talking, when we're talking about our experience being dreamlike, we're not saying that we're kind of in a daze, but rather the full inhabitation of every moment. As we do in a dream, we are fully present in dream. Working with dreams, we open the eye of the dream when we take them up as our study and enter into their universe. And these universes are our own intimate landscape. We are interested as keenly as we are in everything else that pertains to ourself and our own experience. So one of the phrases we use in dream work is gaining the presence of the dream. Our interest in this workshop was not so much analyzing dreams, but we worked with the sense of gaining the presence of the dream, coming into the full life of each being or object in the dream, experiencing it directly, taking it as our life, as what was happening. And we dreamed into each other's dreams. So all together, somebody would tell a dream, and then they'd tell it again. We would all listen. We'd ask clarifying questions. And then we would begin to step into the dream as our own dream. And we would begin anything that we offered by saying, in my dream of your dream, because actually, if somebody's telling a dream, we are experiencing it in our own imagery. They may say the word, but the image that comes into our minds is our own, formed in our own universe. And so some of the images that we dreamed into were, one was a subterranean cave with a pool of water, floating in that pool of water. The image of the toys on the shelf over there. Winged flight over deep flowing water. Featureless black. Tremendously deep black. Knobby hills in the sunshine. A downwardly spiraling candle-lit ramp. So you notice as these images are being offered up, you're probably getting an image right away internally. In your dream. In your dream, a small boat. In my dream, a dark room. And I'm up against a wall. A Boeing 747 landing on a rooftop softly as a butterfly, quietly. A fresh mattress cover. A scuttling rat. Artifacts, what is left behind. This is all intimate experience. And we experience them in the dream body, in the sleeping dream body and in the waking dream body. And dream images often interpose themselves randomly. And we might take them as distractions from the straight-up business of waking up. We can, in our Zen practice, get very straight-up and about straight-up. And that's excellent, and it's also partial, because all of this is going on in our dream body, in the experiential life, and life, that's all we've got. So the dream images, they lurk. It's kind of like the fantasy images that come during the day. Suddenly you'll realize you just drifted into a fantasy. They're lurking at the edges. They lay in wait when our eyes are closed and when our mind is just wandering idly. And they comprise an intimate part of what we bring into practice. So what do you bring into practice? Do you bring your whole life into practice? Or are there parts that you leave out? Are there parts of your experience that don't qualify, that are not legit? This is an issue in any spiritual practice. What is part of it and what is a distraction from it? Those are the concepts we can apply. So are we leaving anything out? Or is all of it grist for the mill? All of it emerging moment by moment in this mill of life, grinding and baking and bringing out of the oven fresh loaves. Little loaves, big loaves, crusty, chewy, dense, airy, perfectly baked sometimes, raw, sometimes burnt. All of these qualities of our experience are so many forms of nutrition for awakening and are absorbed continually in this mysterious body that is our life that we practice with, that we look into. And make up this, they're some of the gems in this treasure trove of Dharma. We don't want to overlook any of the gems. The way we were studying dreams didn't have to do with meaning. We weren't looking at what does this mean, because that's interposed on what is. But rather, what is this? It sounds like one of the primary koans in practice, isn't it? What is this? What is this? And how do we get at what is this? By non-separation, this is body. This is my body. This is my breath. In dreams are truthful. The expressions are truthful. They're not tricky. There aren't games, even though there's a lot of play. They can be very playful, very trickstery in there, the way that they put forth an image for something that is being expressed. But they express quite truthfully and playfully our inmost situation. They offer images for our confusion. They offer images of our wisdom, images that inspire, images that put us in touch with some unarticulated fear of something that we don't feel safe letting into awareness. And in dreams, you know, the situations are so lush. They're so unlikely. Every time somebody began to describe a dream, I just wanted to giggle, because there's just this sound of dreams. We all we can recognize a dream in its description. It's like, oh yeah, I might not have had that dream, but I had, but this is dream. This is dream life. We share this dream body. There's nothing never before encountered. So our dreams are fascinating. Sometimes they're tedious. Does anybody ever have dreams where you wake up and you feel like you've been it's been tedious? I have. Tedious. I'm exhausted. Get me out of here. Or they're delightful, or they're terrifying. And the terrifying ones, the nightmares, really get our attention. Any of you who've been doing dream work recognize that you really pay attention to nightmares because it's the attention that's necessary. It's not what you think. Dreams are not what we think. When we begin to reclaim the presence of the dream and really experience what is being what's being expressed within the dream. So we have these dreams, and then we wake up, and we start into our ordinary conventional positioning in relation to our conditions and our life. I really have that sensation when I wake up from a very involving dream that I am positioning myself for the day. So that will is disengaged in during sleep, except when it comes to lucidity in dreams. I'll talk a little bit about lucidity, but first I'd like to tell you a dream that I had a couple of weeks ago. I was taking care of a baby who was in a crib, and she wasn't doing very well. She was like earnestly trying her best, but she just was not thriving. And I didn't know how to help her, but I just stayed right with her and took care of her as best I knew how. And at one point, something's needed, and I turn around to get it. And actually, the crib is in a big, like a yard and a ranch, at a ranch. But I turn back to her, and she's gone. She's been taken. She's gone. And I feel horrible because I realized I was trying to help her, and I turned to get something for her, but I should have been paying attention because she's now, who knows where she was. I was very worried about her. So I started looking for her. And a lot of things interposed, which I don't quite remember, but at a certain point, I started climbing up a rocky mountain pass. It was kind of a dry landscape, and came to this kind of cliff, which was strewn with boulders that had been smoothed to rounded by a very, very dense water flow. The milky water ran down from the high mountains, and it was roiling and rushing and rolling and spitting, as water does when it's hitting as it falls, leaping and sliding over boulders, large and small, until it roars through a very narrow place and pours into it in a deep sheet over an enormous round rock into a still pool. And I'm standing at the side of the still pool, filled with the sound of the incredible, when water is falling very thickly, it has a deep, almost a deep sound to it. And the moisture, the feeling of moisture and the smell of water, the sound of water. And I realized how thirsty I was. So I reached down, take a drink of the water, and it is the realization of water. I hadn't realized how thirsty I was. And so I took another drink and another drink and another drink. And this milky water was so, the presence of it was so remarkably benevolent. And across on the other side of the pool, I noticed my neighbor Dan, who is in fact my neighbor of many, many years. We're friends. And he has a big bald head, and he was sitting up to his chin in this pool of water. And he said, "Come on in, it's great." And there were a few people up the hillside, so I went right next to Dan, sat down really close, touched cheek to cheek in welcome, and it was the sweetest, sweetest cheek. And just then, an enormous red cat jumped to the rock on the other side. Really, a marmalade cat with thick, lush, thriving coat. And I realized it was the baby. It was the baby. And when I woke from this dream, I felt so happy. So happy. The way that it included my entire sense body, erotic body, water body, rock body, the whole thing was the body. And it was so augmented. It was so complete. And, you know, regaining the presence of the dream, as I talk about it, I can re-experience it entirely. You may have been partaking of some of those images and having your own experience with it. But I ask, what is the difference between that experience and any other in my waking life as it fuels my own being present, fully present and awake and responsive? It's a treasure. That dream is a treasure. It's over. It's now just a memory. And actually, when we think about our dreams, they're always just memories. It's good to realize that. We don't always know what to make of our dreams. So what do we make of lucidity? Does anybody have lucid dreams here? You know what lucid dreams are, is when you become aware while you're dreaming that you are dreaming. And there's a lot of, in dream work circles, there's a lot of interest in lucid dreaming. And in there are some very old traditions of using dreams in our spiritual practice by developing lucidity and becoming realized through that lucid state. I don't know about that. I haven't studied that. But lucidity in dreams is one more thing to fully immerse in when it comes up. I had, years ago when I was studying dream work in my graduate program, we had somebody who was a professor who was really gung-ho lucidity in order to be able to bring the will into the dream and make certain things happen. And so I experimented with that. And what I felt was I was just exhausted, and it didn't feel right. It felt as though I was, it was in service to my ego agendas. And I really appreciate how when you become lucid in dreams, it's another form of clear light. And to do nothing with clear light, but be fully present, just as when we have clarity, when we have moments of complete presence with no separation, there's nothing to be done. The ego's concerns are beside the point. They're very limited. They're very conditioned. They're very tranced, entranced. So, Dogen says, within a dream, this is the dream you express, which is an endless statement. It's an endless poem. Within the dream, this is the dream you express. This is not the dream you have. This is not necessarily the dream that is. This is the dream you express. So he's pulling up the functioning that is inherent in our life to bring everything that we awaken to, everything that we are present to, into the way that we function. The way that we function, what we offer, how we show up for others, how we sensitize to the dream body. What is the dream that the angry cab driver is having? What is the dream that the person sleeping in a cardboard box is having? Being able to, what is the dream that a child who's tantruming is having? You know, really being able to recognize the, come into the presence of the qualities of experience that we have and that others have, so that we can respond with sensitivity and caring. So may you all, if you are so moved, pay attention to your dreams. They're a wonderful source. They, with the clarity that we develop in Zazen and the magnificence of our dream guidance, really help us to live a life of goodness and benevolence. Thank you. Well, I also wanted to say that Sato and I co-led this, and Sato Martin is sitting back by Chosen. Sato is the, was transmitted by Kyogen Carlson and is the teacher at Zen West in Eugene and also Empty Field Zendo. And Sato and I co-lead a number of sessions, and we've been doing this dream work. So if you have a question about dreams, you can ask me, and Sato can also join in here. Or any comments? Yeah. In waking? Trauma dreams. Oh, I'm sorry. What about, so you're asking, what about the terror dreams, PTSD dreams? Sato, do you want to address that?
I think the development of...
Hold that up to your mouth.
Here? Delicious. Is that good? The development of courage and safety to turn towards what we fear most is the path of liberation from being held by that terror. And that's not a single night's practice. And the housing with which we do that, everything that we do creates the ground of that. All of our rituals and our Zazen practice and support from teachers and community. One of the things that people found it helpful here was if we have a particular image that we are afraid of, is to find the safe distance with which we can encounter it. So if I'm afraid of a flesh-eating tiger, it's very hard for me to have that right in front of me and to stay present with it. But I may be able to imagine that tiger on the other side of the zendo in a very strong cage and to allow my body and to receive and be present with that. It is another way to work with what we fear. One guarantee, though, is that when we run from what we fear, it gives it more energy. That we know. So a process.
So just to highlight what you said, putting whatever element is eliciting tremendous fear or whatever scene is eliciting at a safe distance. And this isn't, we're not talking about in the dream necessarily, but when you recall the presence of the dream, you can be with that where it is manageable and doesn't freak you out and re-traumatize. Is that... Any other comments?
I can just confirm that exactly what you said. I knew someone who had a terror dream fairly frequently and would wake up sweating and thrashing and crying, and the dream was of being chased through dark streets and finally cornered and murdered in a dark corner, and it occurred for a number of years, and then finally, the person was able to turn around and face the people and be killed. And then finally, they were able to turn around and face them and not be killed when they could actually face it, completely face it. And where that comes from in the person's own lifetime, there were some correlates to that. But a psychic, not knowing about these dreams, once said, oh, you were a Jewish physician during the Inquisition, and you were pursued in France and killed during the Inquisition. So whether that's related or not, I don't know, but that psychic came up with that spontaneously. So some of this content may not even be relevant to what we call this lifetime, too.
Yes, and I'm not even going there, because that's a whole other subject. But intimately related. But I did want to mention, I wanted to come back to Jizo Bodhisattva. This is an experience I had several years back where I had a very, very difficult situation with somebody who had died. And I was rather haunted, actually, and I felt like my energy was just completely taken up by this haunting. And I had a dream one night about this person being right there. And when I woke up, he was right there. And I, even though I was totally asleep and freaked out and had no idea what was going on, I thought to call on Jizo in this tiny, tiny voice, Jizo, help, help. And it did something energetically to this haunting, to this this war that had been going on with this person. And it really resolved it and has continued to, over the years, resolve it. So when we get into dream work, we get into all kinds of energetic questions about how do we work with some of these very strong states, and are they always just personal symbolizations, or are we picking up other energies in this lifetime from a great distance or in other lifetimes? But we work with them using the tools of practice. Yeah. Awareness and refuge.
I'm always amazed at how creative the mind is and it's sometimes very funny what it comes up with. And then once I had a dream that of beautiful, beautiful music, really just incredibly beautiful music, so moving. And then when I woke up, I thought, where did that music come from? It's not music I ever heard. How in the world did my mind dream up that music?
One more question, one more comment. Does anybody who participated in this workshop want to say anything about your experience? Well, perhaps it's time for lunch.